This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Are you good?
I'm doing well, thank you. Yeah.
Good, good. We got in very special. There was nobody I'd rather co-host this podcast with than Gordo. Gordo, the Play Tessie podcast. Hello, Gordo.
What's going on, Rob? I believe you. I think there is no one you'd rather co-host it with.
So here's the thing, Justin. Like, before you got on, Gordo was like, I can't separate from my phone. I'm glued to my phone. It's unhealthy. I'm like, yeah, it is unhealthy. Just relax. Like, it's just relax.
Is he on trade rumors?
Yes, he's on trade rumors. And here's the thing, Justin, is that I literally can tweet out anything and Gordo will be like, oh, what did you mean by that?
everyone wants a little insight, huh?
Have you ever been that guy? Are you that guy? No?
I've only been the guy to search trade rumors when all the times I've been traded to CS, the internet finds out before I do.
So, all right. So that's the first thing, because I always love those stories. Give me your best. I found out this happened. That wasn't just the.
Fortunately enough, I have a good agency, and they've told me.
Oh, they're the best.
Yeah, they've told me, or at least like the GM of the team has told me before I've actually found out on the internet. But there's always, you know, speculation and stuff like that. So sometimes fun to read, sometimes not fun to read. But yeah.
All right, so. So first of all, thank you so much for coming on. Everyone's looking for you. Everyone loves when we said, everyone loves the hot stove season, but everyone loves when actually somebody signs during hot stove season. So yeah. It's basically been the Angels and then you signing with the Red Sox. The Angels were there, seven guys, and you signing with the Red Sox.
Not a whole lot of action besides the Angels. Yeah.
No, but thank you. We want to thank you from the bottom of our heart. My first thing is just sort of take me through, and we can get to some other stuff, but people like this, you know, people like the story behind the story.
Truthfully, it happened fast, man.
Right.
As a reliever, and being older, sometimes you're on the back burner for most of these teams because there might be a Juan Soto out there that they're in bidding war, and that's the priority, which is totally understandable. But clearly, Boston wanted me, and talking to my agent, we were able to come to a deal, and happy to be signed and be able to prepare for it, where I'm not kind of lingering, wondering where I'm going to go, Arizona, Florida, this and all that, because sometimes you got to pack and leave within 2 or 3 days, and fortunately enough, I don't have to do that.
Well, so here's the thing is that I also love when teams say we are identifying you and we're gonna be proactive with you. Like, everyone wants that to be the Juan Sotos of the world, but a lot of teams see something in a player, they see the fit in the player, and they're very proactive.
It's a nice feeling.
When was the first time that you heard that they were proactive?
Truthfully, it happened very fast, and within a couple of days, we had a deal in place. I would say about 2 weeks ago, my agent called and he's like, hey, here's kind of where we stand of where you're going to fit as far as in, salary, teams that are going to need left-handed relievers, left-handed relievers that pitch in high leverage situations. We've been talking to Boston, and then it kind of escalated very quickly when I said, yeah, let's explore it more. And then one thing after another and it's done.
Well, that was one thing. Talking's one thing, but then they make the offer. And I saw your agents, obviously Aces, the Levinsons, great guys. And also, by the way, I'm not just saying this because you're on. go look at their track record with relievers. I mean, they take care of
relievers. Yeah, they're one of the best career decisions I've ever made. You know, I joined them when I was in Double A, and at that point they were getting no value or money out of me. I mean, I'd already had my signing bonus done with, already been in pro ball, and it's probably one of the best career decisions I ever made to take them on. We've had a great partnership. Man, they just take care of me, and I'm not super involved as far as like telling them if I do have a choice where I want to play or not. Like I let them handle a lot, and they've handled it so well.
So Gordo, before you go, this one last thing you mentioned. Okay, they're interested. Interest is one thing. An offer is another thing. And yeah. And a legit offer. I mean, a legit offer. So did that surprise you?
Yeah, it did. It did surprise me. And truthfully, in my past free agencies, Seth or Sam or Mike, you know, will be in text conversations of, hey, here's who's interested and this and that. And usually it takes one offer, and usually those offers take a while. You know, I found out over the years, I found out more of how they negotiate, teams negotiate, and the actual offer takes a while till someone actually commit, or till a team actually commits and make an offer. So yeah, you do feel a little bit, you know, wanted or special that an offer is actually made. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm thankful for it.
Were there other teams in the mix at this point, and was there any temptation from your side of things to wait the market out to see if anyone else would jump in? Like, what did the Red Sox do that made you want to jump on their offer?
Well, I think that every good agency kind of knows, you know, what salary and stuff you're going to make, what teams have available spots for what position you play, and. You know, the contract that I signed with Boston is kind of what I figured I would land in after what I made last year and how I pitched and this and that and some underlying numbers and all that. And so when they make an offer and I feel like it's good enough, I mean, me personally, I don't feel like you go test the market at that point. Mm-hmm. And who knows, you know, You get to January, February when teams are making rosters and setting rosters for spring training, some of those spots might fill up. And so in my mind, it's like I said, it's a good thing to be wanted. And I was great with the offer, you know, happy with it. So why not move forward?
So obviously you've proven yourself throughout the years, and everybody evolves. One of the interests, I find a lot of things fascinating in baseball. You know why I know this? Because I've said I find this fascinating about five times in our conversation right now. So I apologize, but I do find this fascinating. What the Red Sox say to you? And maybe it's just, okay, we like you, here's the offer, and then you go from there. But I don't know if sometimes, and I know from the guy who's another client of Aces, like Joe. Guy who owns the LLC to this podcast.
Yeah.
He went to the Dodgers when he was a free agent. He says, Andrew Friedman gave him a 3-hour tour, said, we like this, we like this, we like this. Boom. So what was the Red Sox message?
Truthfully, I didn't have a whole lot of interaction with the Red Sox during the deal. And that's more me just being hands off, let Seth, Sam do their thing. But then of course, you know, like once you agree, then you talk to them and, yeah, you know, they like my stuff, like how I pitch, like where in the game I pitch. Felt like they had a need for a lefty reliever towards the back end. And that's kind of what I've done all my whole career. And I think it was the right fit. I think that Andrew Bailey is a very helpful pitching coach and can maybe tinker with some things to just help maybe get quicker outs or more swing and miss, not really sure. But yeah, I mean, I clearly, if you're wanted, they like your stuff at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but no, I didn't have a ton of, you know, interaction with the team. Now when I was a, last season when I went to spring training with the Dodgers, and then I wasn't going to make that team. So they were going to Korea. So I was on the market. Red Sox were also, in the mix then. So I kind of knew there was a relationship there to start. But no, I mean, truthfully, happened kind of fast. I'm not one to have a whole lot of conversations about it with teams. And I don't, maybe if you're the top tier free agent in their mind, you might have a little bit more conversations. But me personally, over my free agencies, it's mainly been through Seth and Sam.
Well, before Gordo, you go, I'll just say this, is that you will, obviously, I'll give you the prelude to the first conversation. Throw strike one, and if you have a four-seam fastball, put it in your back pocket. So, go ahead, Gordo.
So you're obviously locked in for Boston. What excites you about either pitching for the Red Sox specifically or moving to Boston, living in Boston?
I mean, it's a really cool city, man. Been there before, of course. Great fans, historical stadium, historical team. That stuff excites me. I think it's more of a just want to compete than anything else. You know, like at this point in my career, clearly I like competing. And I believe in the Red Sox can compete for a world championship. I mean, I think that's every baseball player's goal. Don't get me wrong, we all want to have long, great careers, but we play the game to win, and I believe we can win.
So I want to go back to what you said about spring training. Obviously, you know, you part ways with the Dodgers, but you sign a major league deal with the Reds, and so that shows, and the Red Sox were interested, that shows that you were showing something, and which is, you know, it could have gone the other way. You could have had, you know, I know that you were banged up, right? Couple of years.
Yep.
But you were showing something in that time with you were the Dodgers. Did you feel that way? Did you feel, or was there a sense of uncertainty?
I mean, I felt like I was really ready to go into spring training as far as health went. So that helped. But also started throwing a little bit different of a breaking ball. Threw a split for a while, wasn't necessarily comfortable with it, but I had a good spring training. So I knew that at least not making the Dodgers team, that there was a chance that other teams would be interested in the, you know, 5, 6, whatever innings it was I'd showed myself in big league games, that I was healthy, and B, my stuff was still there.
How did you evolve this year? I mean, like you said, you're coming off a couple of years where, you know, injuries, I mean, unfortunate injuries. But as you said, you're ready. You come into spring training. You just said that, you know, you maybe tweak some things with the Dodgers. You come in this year. We're all evolving. Gordo, are you evolving? Are you evolving, Gordo?
Yes. Every day.
I'm evolving.
We all do, Rob. We all do.
I'm sitting here ready to coach a basketball practice. I'm evolving. I may or may not run a bunch of isolations. Who knows? But how did you evolve this year?
Well, I don't know how much I necessarily evolved. I know that the slider helped with some evolving in a sense, mainly because I've been predominantly forcing cutter for majority of my career. Some of those cutters get called sliders, but they weren't really a true slider. This year, I felt like I threw more of a true slider. Which helped. Now, I do think that at times there's adjustments to be, you know, still made because scouting report's out, you know what I mean? Like, been around a while, scouting report's out. So you gotta evolve, make adjustments. And probably could have done a little bit better job during last season. But when you're in the midst of the season, especially as a reliever, it's really hard to work on things or make an adjustment because, hey, you got to be ready to go every night. And But the biggest thing for me last year was health, by far. You know, making, I made 60 appearances, felt healthy ending the year. That by far was the biggest thing.
Go ahead, Goro.
Yeah, just piggybacking off of that, I don't think, at least to this point, Red Sox fans probably know the comeback story that you had, you know, recovering from Tommy John and getting hurt, warming up in the bullpen for your return. How did that experience in the bullpen that day motivate you to get your body right and to be healthy last year? And how much better does it feel now, getting to come off of a healthy season, to now prepare for a big league team and not have that be the thing that's in your rearview mirror?
Yeah, a little bit of relief for sure. Yeah, that sucked. I mean, like, don't get me wrong, I put a ton of work in coming back from TJ. Everyone does. It's a really long process. They say 12 months. It's not really 12 months. The 1-2% might make it back in 12 months, but you really don't feel like yourself, or at least I didn't till, you know, 15, 16 months post. And then you need some innings to kind of fine tune some things. And I had to kind of get those innings A in spring training and B during last season to start feeling a little bit more, normal and, not like I had surgery. But yeah, the lap tendon tear, after all the, rehab, for the elbow was not very exciting. It wasn't terrible because, it was fixable. Like, it wasn't like I had another 12 months. It's a 90 to 100 day rehab process for the lap tendon. I just didn't have enough time to get back that season. So I knew, like, I was going to go into an off season so I could at least take the lap tendon rehab a little bit slower so I could make sure I was healthy going into last spring.
I'm going to ask you a baseball question off of that. And we've done hundreds of podcasts over the course of the season, and we've asked about the injury sort of problem in baseball and pitchers. And I find it very fast. I used the word again, sorry. I find it very interesting that I find a lot of things fascinating to me, but everyone, there's so many different opinions and philosophies and all of it when it comes to this stuff. And I know that even at the GM meetings, baseball got everyone together, including, by the way, Theo Epstein came in for a day to talk about this, about the injury problem and how we can fix it. So all that long-winded way of asking you this question, what is your, if your power ranking, what is number one on the list of either the cause of it or something that we can do for this?
Oh man, the cause of it is we are throwing real hard and your body's not made to do that. Like, there's a lot of stress on the arm, elbow, shoulder, forearm. I don't ever think the cause of it is going to change. Now, I do think that over the years, they'll be able to fine tune strengthening programs, and they have already, but like to limit. But I will say this, as guys have gotten stronger, course velocities have gone up, those things haven't necessarily met in the middle to mitigate the injury. I think the injuries are going to continue to happen because guys are throwing so hard. And especially, early season cold, regardless of, I'm talking more relievers here, regardless of how much time you have to get ready to go in the game, you really don't have that much time to go in the game. So yeah, you got to like prepare yourself before your name's called to go pitch. But if your arm's not fully ready, and then you go out there and you're trying to rip 95 plus and sliders, eventually something's going to give.
Well, along those lines, Adam Ottavino was on with us, and one of the things he said was interesting, where he said that when relievers, especially younger relievers, go out, You have the TrackMan set up. And hey, you know, listen, we're going to – let's see if you can throw a sweeper. And you got 10 pitches and rip it.
Yeah.
Be measured. And then we're going to decide whether or not it's worth going forward. So everything out of the gate, because everything is measured, they're ripping everything from minute one. Does that resonate at all?
Yes, probably with the younger guys a little bit more. I think as you learn your body and have thrown and A, you probably get a little less sore the older you get, or maybe it's just the mental, I'm fine. I don't know. But yeah, that's probably it. I do think that you're kind of born with either a good Tommy John or not, or a rotator cuff, whatever it may be. But yeah, there's probably a number on everyone's elbow or shoulder that eventually the more stress you put on it, yes, you know, you better rehab it if it's not hurt anyways, in a sense. You know, you better just take care of it because, yeah, especially as relievers, it's hard to work on things at 80% because the moment you get in the game, that pitch at 80% in the bullpen that looks really good is not really the same pitch when your arm's moving 20% faster.
Well, in this, I love bullpens. I love the ideas of having guys like yourself who understand what it takes in a bullpen. And you look at the Dodgers, right? The Dodgers had a bunch of those guys. And I understand a lot of teams are searching for the next great talent and uncovering maybe something that somebody didn't uncover, but you've been in bullpens and you know, like, how bullpens are constructed. And there is a value, I think, of having veterans like yourself of saying, hey, you know what? We have a bad outing. We're going to have a good one the next time. We don't need to throw 110% every single time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I don't think for most relievers, or I shouldn't speak up for everyone, for myself, there's no way I'm going out there not giving 100, you know, 110 is not realistic, but like every time I take the ball, I'm going out there giving 100 because I need my mind to be the same. My stuff might not be the same because I might be fatigued or whatnot, but at least I need my mind to be the same to compete. But I think along the lines of good game, bad game, that's learned, and that's learned with failure. Yeah. I mean, and with the amount of games we played, the amount of appearances we make, if you're holding on to two games ago, this next pitch probably isn't going to go that well. So you better get over it. you better make this pitch, because it's all going to build up. You know, if you don't get in the right headspace, it's eventually going to crumble.
How long into your career did it take you to get to that point where you understood that and were actually able to, like, implement it into your everyday usage?
I think I've been pretty good about it majority of my career. You know, don't get me wrong, like, there's games that dwell on me and I have to flush them, and it might take longer than I think it should take. But especially with kids and wife, like, you can't go home every night after a bad one feeling bad. You know, you gotta go be a dad, you gotta go be a husband, you gotta do these things externally that matter more than the game. So I think I've done a good job over the majority of my career with that, but I also had great examples when I was, you know, a rookie, 2-3 years in, of, hey dude, like, we got a game tomorrow, or we got a game today, let's go. And so, yes, a learned thing, but I also think I had a pretty good mindset of, I got to be able to flush that one and prepare for the next outing. Absolutely.
Who was your biggest mentor
in that? Man, AJ Burnett was great for me, because I was a rookie and he'd been around for, I think when I played with him, he'd already had 12, maybe 13 years in, and took care of me, in a sense, as far as, like, A, watching his preparation, B, you know, like, just handling the mental side. Not that we sat there and talked about the mental side, but if he went out and had a bad one, he was trying to be the same next dude or same guy the next day and prepare for his next one 5 days later. And I wasn't a starter. I was a reliever. So like some of the stuff we related on, but he had to wait for his next outing. I didn't necessarily, I might be in there the next night. Tony Watson.
Oh yeah.
He was more of an example for me as far as routine, which I think is massive for a reliever. You got to have a routine. You know, you got to be able to go down to the bullpen, know I'm going to do this at this time. You got to watch the game. And for the most part, not all the time, because it's a game. If you watch the game enough, you kind of know when your name's going to be called to pitch or to warm up or whatever it may, you know, like if they score runs here, it might be me. If they don't score runs here, it might be this guy. If this guy gets in trouble, I'm probably going to have this hitter or this piece of the lineup. All those things go into your routine of preparation, not only like getting a stretching, some kind of shoulder, elbow, warm up, pre even stepping on the rubber before your name's called. All those little things help within a routine to just prepare each night of, okay, I'm ready to pitch because I've done these things.
Are you tight with anybody on the Red Sox now or know anybody?
Not really. Truthfully, Trevor Story lives close by. But you know, we don't know, we haven't played, on the same team or anything. There's a few guys since I've been around about a while, we've crossed paths, but no, truthfully, it's going to be a kind of new clubhouse for me.
That's all right. That's what 7 weeks in Fort Myers is for. Gordo, you got anything lastly?
Yeah, last question I have. What color baseballs and boring shirt you want Rob to send
you? Let's go.
Well, red, probably.
Well, come on.
Red or black. I tend to wear a lot of
Really?
Red, yeah.
We have red, we have white.
That works.
Yeah, well, yes, we will make it happen.
Where are the black ones? I saw Middlebrooks post a video today wearing a black one. You see that?
Yeah, Rob? We have black. Yes, of course. Come on.
I thought you said you didn't have it.
No, I mean, we don't have red and black, Gordo. I mean,
you're saying both. Okay, yeah, I got you.
We're working on a lot of things heading into the new year. But listen, Justin, it's really, we're both looking forward to getting to know you a little bit better. It's going to be a great time. And the last thing is like, I would imagine that you're in Texas. If you said you knew your story, you're in Texas, right?
Yeah.
So that's closer to LA, if they want to have another meeting with Juan Soto in case they need to come in. Do this for me if you can. Like, so I asked Ortiz this a couple of days ago. If they said, okay, Justin, we need you to go talk to Juan Soto, give me the pitch.
I would probably just show him his scouting report for what pitchers have to do to him and be like, bro, please join us so no one really has to face you on this team. I mean, it's a pretty impressive thing, man.
What is that like?
There's not a whole lot of holes there. That's for sure.
Even left on left.
And sometimes, you know, over the numbers, he might be going better left on left than he is against righties. You know, that he's a special hitter.
So, I guess let me ask you this: of the top three guys in that scouting report, of the who have the least amount of things that you can actually attack. Would he be top three in baseball?
As far as left on left, absolutely.
Yeah. So left on left, you say, hey, we got the lefty coming in, get him out. Well, how?
I wouldn't necessarily say how, but yeah, it's absolutely a harder scouting report to look at than most left-handed hitters, for sure. Absolutely.
All right, we're taking the tact of building him up. We're playing him.
So, I like it.
Yeah, so we'll see. But if nothing else, we look forward to giving you T-shirts in person, and thank you so much for jumping on.
All right, guys, thank you.